recording.
Dead.
Check, 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 check.
Ha! All right, here we go. That was me checking.
Oh, give me 1 second. 1 second. I'll be back in 1 second.
Okay.
Let's ride.
That was almost one. Yeah, one
was
second.
Like, well, 1 second. That was pretty good.
Yeah. All right, I am about to record. Come on.
Is it actually 4:13? It's 4:13.
Yes, because the last time was 4:12.
Okay, recording.
You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 413. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the program tonight, out of Los Angeles, Mr. Ricky Frankel.
How's it going, guys? Missed you last week.
Did you?
Well, actually, no, I was in San Francisco, so I was off having my own good time.
Yeah, I mean, like, you shouldn't think about us when you're out here. That's unhealthy. Also, joining me on the show, Mr. John Gentile. John, are you in the hurricane target zone right now?
Yeah, actually, I think I am. Apparently, it's like the size of like four Colorados or something. And I have what's called a mediation tomorrow. That's where two sides, one side suing the other, they meet up. A third party sees if you can resolve the whole thing. And I was talking to the other side. They're like, "Well, we're going to try to be there, but we're not sure about the weather." And I'm thinking, rain? Are you kidding me? But then, like, there's actual like hurricanes that are like demolishing people's houses. So we'll see. Tomorrow I'll be in New Jersey. Dodging the heart, like Twister, like the scene with the cow and Tom Hanks. That'll be me tomorrow.
I mean, given that no one's going to hear this podcast for about a week, you may be dead.
Well, let's hope not, Adam. Let's hope not.
I mean, that the whole East Coast may have just kind of sunk into the Atlantic. So hopefully that doesn't happen because, you know, that'd be super inconvenient. So anyways, we're going to talk about a bunch of things that happened in the punk news world this week. Before we do, John.
Yes,
I have very important news about how I have how I somehow escaped Philadelphia without having to pay anyone.
Recently or from a while ago?
No, it's all your fault, kind of. So last year we did a little concert with World Inferno Friendship Society. It was the Punk News Summer Soiree. You remember this?
Are
you aware of the Summer Soiree?
How could I forget, Adam?
I've heard of it.
Yes.
We only posted about it on the website like every day for like 2 weeks straight.
We did that. So anyways, so last year I came to this. Not this year because, you know. But last year I did. And to get to Philadelphia from my neck of the woods, I had to, for the first time in my life, drive on the Philly Turnpike. You know the Philly Turnpike, right?
I know it well. I was on it yesterday, and I shall be on it in the next 12 hours.
Right. So here's the thing about Canada. We don't have toll roads. So whenever we end up on toll roads, we do stupid, stupid things. Or at least I do. This is very much like, you know, people that don't have to deal with roundabouts when all of a sudden they have to drive in like Boston or something where there's roundabouts everywhere. You just you know, chaos happens. So I was driving to the summer soiree last year. So basically I'm coming from Buffalo. So like, you know, that area of, you know, Southwestern New York or whatever it is, or not Southwestern. What is it there? Whatever. What's that area of New York called?
Buffalo is Northwestern.
Yeah, it is Northwestern. What are they called? Like, I feel like South, anyways, Western New York. It's Western New York. That's what they call it. So I'm coming
not
from
Manhattan.
Western New York. Not Manhattan. No, I'm on the Philly Turnpike. I get on there. I get my little ticket that says, you know, if you get off at this exit or this, you know, it's going to cost this much, and you get on this exit, it's this much, and this one, it's this much. And based on my understanding of my maps here, I'm just going to basically drive the whole fucking thing to the end and, you know, pay whatever the max is and then get off. So I was kind of coming up to, I wasn't sure if it was the end because I've never been on the Philly Turnpike before, but there was this section where the road had 700 lanes and, you know, 12 of those lanes went into some toll booth and the other 25 of the lanes did not. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm supposed to go in that particular toll booth or if I keep going and then there'll be some sort of ultimate toll booth that I will hit. So I just kind of fucking kept cooking on. And then I got off and went to your house and then we had a summer soiree. So I'm pretty sure I blew past wherever I was supposed to pay.
You blasted through an easy pass. An easy pass is basically you pay the toll like electronically instead of in person, so you get a bill in the mail. But Adam, being Canadian, well, I'll let you continue the story. But you ran the easy pass, which is illegal and you can get arrested for.
Right. So I guess I ran the easy pass. So I mean, in Canada,
like Adam White, blockade runner.
Mm-hmm. So in Canada, we have, well, I don't know about everyone in Canada, but in Ontario, we have this one toll road that they put in. And it's actually like, it's a weird debacle of a thing because the government built this section of highway to kind of go around Toronto. And then they sold that highway to the private sector. So now some private industry runs that highway.
A private company owns a highway?
Yeah, it's really weird.
And you guys talk about America all the time.
This is pretty fucked up. I mean, it's you guys got your own problems, but this one's pretty fucked up.
You guys are like RoboCop, where Chicago's a private company, you know, in Britain.
So the 407 has camera sensors on both ends of it. So you cannot get on or off of the 407 without having your plates photographed. And there's no booths. Like, you always just get a bill in the mail. So in my brain, I'm thinking, well, if I just blew through the easy pass lane, I assume I'm going to get a bill or something, and I'll just have to deal with that then. But nothing ever came. And then it's sort of been in the back of my head that I really hope that I'm not in the States one day in like 3 years driving somewhere and I get pulled over by a cop and the cop's like, sir, you owe $9,000 to the Philadelphia Turnpike in late fees or something like that. So I found I don't know how or why, this says really bad things about the cleanliness of my car, but I found the fucking little slip, the turnpike slip, a year later.
The turnpike ticket, if you will.
Yeah, the ticket in my center council. And I got in my head where I'm like, oh, fuck, I should really figure out if I'm on the hook for something here, because I do not want to be pulled over at some future point where I have somewhere to go in the States. Because I don't know if I've been over since then. I may not have.
I just wonder how they would like keep a record of you because you're Canadian. Like assuming they took a picture of your license plate, how would they, like, they couldn't enforce it in Canada, obviously. They'd have to enforce it in the States. But do they even have a mechanism set up to, like, track out-of-country plates, you know?
I don't know. Well, I mean, it's still just letters and numbers on a plate. It's not like my plate's written in Klingon. Like, they could figure it out, right? So I phoned them today, John. I phoned the Philly Turnpike Authority or whatever the hell. And I'm like, hey, do I owe you money? And they're like, well, what's your infraction number, sir? And I'm like, I don't have one because I don't know if I owe you money. And they're like, should you owe us money? And I'm like, you tell me. And they looked up my plate, and guess what, John?
Zero.
Scot-free. I don't know who the fuck I am. So
bam-o. Good job, Adam. You cheated me and my fellow countrymen out of about $27. I hope you feel good about yourself.
I feel very good about this. I now also feel invincible, whereas U.S. law does not apply to me.
Oh, so. like a Persian king visiting like Connecticut or something, and he can do whatever he wants because he's got diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, I'm like the international criminal court here. John Bolton's going to have to go on the news and talk about how he's going to sanction me if I keep flouting your laws. So, this is great.
Adam, like really blockade cool. runner. I like this, Adam. I like this.
So, anywho.
It's like an 80s movie. It's like, Adam, we need to get this into America, but we don't want to pay the $27 turnpike toll. Adam's like, I'll take care of it. And he puts on, like, dark glasses, and he, like, fires up, like, a Volvo.
Yeah, and then like the reality of it is like it's me in a car listening to podcasts and eating a bag of trail mix, but whatever. So I wanted to bring that up here because it was quasi summer soiree related. So there you go, John. I'm scot free.
Adam White, the tales are still coming out from summer soiree 1 and 2. That only proves what a great event summer soiree is.
So many babies were born 9 months after that show.
Yeah, you find out.
And, so anyways, what's in the mailbag, John?
All right, we got some good mail this week. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. I think this first email, I think it was like spoken into a program and then emailed, like instead of typed out.
Okay. It's by my my mother-in-law. That's how she communicates with us, is she sits on her couch and talks to her iPad, and then it sends us a string of nonsense.
So I'm going to try to put this back together. So Necromangler, if I mess this up, then I'm sorry. Here's what I think Necromangler is saying. I've been listening to some older episodes of the podcast.
Bad choice.
Great choice. When it comes to punching Nazis, I think it is okay under the conditions that you discussed. John, I need to thank you for introducing me to Alice Cooper. I have seen him twice at the local casino, and the second time was opening for the Rolling Stones. And I think
bullshit on this. You do not introduce anyone to Alice Cooper.
Well, you want to just read what's here, and then we can figure it out?
I just want to criticize every other sentence you say.
Okay, anyways, the reason for me writing the first part of this email is I work in a kitchen, and when you played the effing Village People, I couldn't get to the skip button fast enough on my phone. I had to listen to the whole song, so this is my revenge. Oh, I see. The title of the email is, John, I believe this is your fault. Second, here's what Necromangler says. Second part is, I think Leftover Crack still doing their show when two members are being detained at the border is really cool because it shows respect to the fans that put forth the effort to show up. People have costs and scheduling to consider when attending a show, and it is nice to see a band still do a show even though they had a legitimate reason to cancel. On the other hand, one hard sneeze or one wet fart by Morrissey and he will cancel 3 shows. A combination of the two whole tour is canceled. And I imagine he goes home and stares at a wall for a month and a half. Oh, I see. Morrissey, that is. So if Morrissey sneezes and farts at the same time, then he goes home and doesn't do the tour. Fun fact, and to my great chagrin, do you guys know what band is named after burping / sneezing and farting at the same time? It really bummed me out to learn this.
No. Ooh.
Hawkwind. It bummed me out so much to learn that that's where the name of the band comes from. It comes from Nick.
I like this letter now.
It's from Nick Turner burping and farting at the same. Like I thought it was like some mystical, like astral thing. No, it's Nick Turner passing gas at both ends. What a bummer. Anyways, I guess what I'm saying is Leftover Crack rules and Morrissey is a dick. Keep talking, and I might listen. From Necromangler. Necromangler ending his email with a threat. How you like that, Adam?
I mean, all emails should be ended with a threat. We're going to talk about that story tonight, right? So.
Yes.
Should we do so now, or should we keep rolling with the mail?
Let's do it now. Why not? We're in the mood. We're in the groove. So anyways, I'll tell the story real quick. Okay, so Leftover Crack, they were going on a tour of Canada, I think 4 or 5 dates, but when they got to the border, both Stizzycrack and Brad Logan were detained and refused entry into California. Do you guys recall Canada, rather, Adam's hometown. Oh. The reason they said they didn't let him in is somebody ripped him off for a $27 toll. And so they were getting revenge, Canada. I guess it would be the states getting revenge. That doesn't make any sense. Anyways.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Do you guys recall, in the post, did they say why? I mean, I know why they got denied, but did it say why they got denied in the post? Do you guys recall?
I don't remember seeing a specific reason.
Okay, then I won't say why, but they both got detained, and it was for a BS reason. The grand irony being is a couple of years ago that they got in with no issue. So they were denied. So instead of canceling the tour, so I mean, really, the only long running member of Leftover Crack that got in was Alec, the bass player, and basically the newer guys got in as well, Donnie and a couple of they've got a guest vocalist singing. Joey Steele of All Torn Up is singing, and so with Dave Rodriguez from Crumb Bums and Starving Wolves. And also Reed Wolcott from We Are the Union will be doing some guitar. So it's basically Alec and some new guys, including two guest singers, doing Leftover Crack stuff. And this was very very divisive in the punk rock scene. On one hand, people are saying, that's not Leftover Crack, that's some people playing Leftover Crack's music, and it's lame for you to charge for that. And the other people are saying, that's cool that even though the tour was canceled beyond their control, they still figured out a way to make it happen, at least to some degree, for the fans that want to see it. And of course, notably, the band did say, we'll refund anybody that wants their money back, but otherwise the tour will continue. What do you guys have an opinion on this? Should they have canceled the whole thing, or was this the right play? And American bands often have problems getting into Canada.
No, honestly, I thought this was a good call. I mean,
I have to point out, the reason that they were denied was not because they didn't have the proper paperwork. They already had cleared the proper visas, permissions, and that kind of thing.
So, I got to tell you, though you don't get – there people who are cynical about this, they're right. This isn't like Leftover Crack, but you get to see a bunch of really cool other artists performing their music. So it's kind of a cool once-in-a-lifetime thing anyway. That's how I would look at it. I would have gone regardless. I think the fact that the band said, if you want a refund, go for it, I think that was more than fair and actually quite generous. What was confusing to me was, I'm like, they made it through, like Brad and Sturgeon made it through to the border to Canada, like either a year or two ago, because I remember like they did an interview with Nardwuar. So that's what I just didn't get. I did not understand why this happened. This happened at all, to be honest.
The borders on both sides are not particularly rational, and we've been dealing with this in my day job because, like, we live right in the border. We have actually like clients of my day job are on both sides of the border, and my company operates on both sides, and we've been through all kinds of legal advice and this and that from people about, like, you know, what kind of visas can we get for our employees or whatever so they can go over and do something. And what it all sort of boils down to is, you know, you can pay for whatever fancy paperwork you like and get whatever visas lined up that you need. But ultimately, if the guy that you're talking to at the border, you know, looks at you funny and, you know, had a bad sleep that night and, you know, doesn't like the cut of your jib, he can pretty much turn you away for any reason, and you trying to protest it is just going to make your life worse, because turn you away could turn around and really easily become a ban. Now I'm speaking more about like having to go into the States as opposed to going into Canada, but I suspect it's sort of the same on both ends. Like, the border guards have an incredible amount of power to really fuck your life up if you say or do the wrong thing with them. So as to like why Leftover Crack got over before and didn't this time, that assumes that there is, you know, some calculation and some cold logic that's happening each time about why they're being let over. But a lot of it just comes down to, like, you know, if the guy who's in the booth is gonna fuck with you or not.
Adam, why can't you like not get in and then come back like 6 hours later or 10 hours later when you have a different guy working the booth or whatever? Why couldn't you do that?
Because they probably throw your license into some database for a while that says, we just turned this guy away. Mm-hmm. You trying to come back would make it worse. Because they'd know. You drive up to any of those booths, like we talked about earlier in our little Turnpike discussion. You know, as you drive up there, you're being photographed, you know, all sorts of times, you and your plates and everything else. So they would know if you just, like, you know, backed out and, like, put on a fake mustache and came back, that they would know these things.
And this might be a dumb question. What if, I've leftover crack makes, at least we'll say, decent money. You know what I mean? So why couldn't you rent a car and then come back and try to get in through your rental car? I guess because they keep your ID info too, maybe?
Yeah. When you cross, you hand them your passports, and then those passports get, like, scanned into some computer, and I assume, then, like, thrown into some database or something. So if you get turned away, you're turned away. You're turned away on the terms that they gave you. You can't, like, game your way back over. At least in my experience, you cannot, and you probably shouldn't. I mean, so given that, I think it's kind of cool that, like, they put together, you know, they put together something to kind of keep that tour going. The only thing that I could see showing up to that show and being pretty cheesed as a fan if I didn't have forewarning that it was going to be, some slapdash cobbled together version of the band that's playing. If for no other reason than, like, Stizza strikes me as a person that people would go see because he's Stizza more than they would go see Leftover Crack because it's Leftover Crack. You know what I mean? Like if this was the Smiths touring and Morrissey got turned away at the border, and then they got, I don't know, like the guy from Loverboy to sing for the Smiths, you wouldn't show up to the show and go, like, well, at least I still got to see the Smiths. Like, you might be kind of, might be kind of cheesed. Even if Johnny Marr is there, you might be like, I might have wanted a refund for this. I don't know.
Well, listen, it's not their fault. I think they made the right call. Obviously, if they didn't give people their money back, I'd say it would be lame. But I give kudos to Leftover Crack for continuing onward and making the best of a bad situation. And what can you do? At least people are seeing a form of Leftover Crack, or even if it's not Leftover Crack, getting together and have a good time, which is 50% of the point of going to a concert anyways. So I would
Speaks to the communal aspect of this band and the sort of, like, the collective aspect of them that they can do that, and I think that's really cool.
I mean, what are you going to do otherwise? Sit at home and cross your arms, you know? Say,
well, that's the thing. Like, if you were going to go to that show, still go to that show. Like, you know.
Yeah, it's probably going to be good.
One thing is I am always meant to punk rock because a lot of people were like, I can't believe. They're like. What does he mean that the border is detaining them? It's like, well, I'm sure he wasn't turned away for no reason. It's like, I'm surprised at the punk rockers that are immediately taking the side of the government. Like, I'm like, isn't this punk rock? You know?
And you got to remember, like, what detained also might mean in the border context. That may mean that they, like...
I mean, they sit you in a room for a half hour is what it means.
Yeah, they pulled you over and talked to you for a while and searched your shit and then turned you away. It doesn't mean that they threw you into some sort of Gitmo situation.
I did like old punker's response, just bring crazy in the brains and it should be fine. Very true, old punker. Very true. Anyways, you can always reach that podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail. That's podcast@punknews.org. I'm going to play a song real quick. Unfortunately, Johnny Strike of Crime passed away. Adam White, do you know Crime? I've spoken about them a couple of times on the podcast. Do you know Crime?
Oh, yeah. Was Crime not the first L.A. punk band, or am I thinking a different band?
San Francisco, first, second, or third punk band. Probably the first, maybe the second. Anyway, Crime is a super important punk band. Of course, they're one of these amazing bands that never put out an album. They did put out 3 singles. The first 2 are amazing. The third is okay. People like to say the third single is like the worst thing ever. It's not the worst thing ever. It's okay. The first 2 singles are amazing. Crime used to dress like cops and play like very aggressive, Stooges-sounding kind of music. Johnny Strike, the lead vocalist, just died of cancer, unfortunately, which is sad. He was 70. A couple of the other members have died as well. However, there's two crime compilations out there. The first is called San Francisco's Doomed and or San Francisco's Still Doomed. It's basically the same album. Get San Francisco's Still Doomed if you can get it. It's a collection of all their demos. That came out in the 90s and then again in the 2000s. Just recently, about 3 years ago, an album came out called Murder by Guitar, which is all the officially released crime tracks plus some other unreleased stuff. And it is amazing. It is some of the best punk rock ever recorded. It really is. I was a little, I'm not going to go on and on about this, but I'm always annoyed, well, not always, but I'm often annoyed at some of the commenters that go on and on about Paramore. They'll go on and on, why are you posting about Gwen Stefani? That's not punk. Okay, Gwen Stefani's not punk, but then how come you're not commenting on Crime, which is as punk as it gets? You know what I mean? So if you want to play the OG punk game that, Gwen Stefani's not punk, or KRS-One's not punk, or Yellow Man's not punk, or George Clinton's not punk, which all those guys actually are punk, even though they're not punk, they are punk, then you need to get hip to Crime and those kind of acts. I'm proud to say punk news at least gave Crime some props why some of the guys were still around. At least we'll always have their music. Crime is an amazing band. This is Crime doing one of the greatest punk singles of all time. Baby, You Are So Repulsive by Crime. Get this compilation, Murder by Guitar. It fluctuates in price. Sometimes it's $20. Sometimes it's $80. Don't pay $84. It'll come back down to $20. And if you can't get that, get the San Francisco Still Doomed compilation, which is cheap. Anyway, this is Crime doing Baby, You Are So Repulsive, an amazing track.
That was Crime, so we're going to stick with some OG stuff here and talk about the Ramones. So there's a deluxe version of Road to Ruin coming out. We've talked about that on a past show. But you can now stream one of the release's bonus tracks over at the KEXP radio station, which is a full band studio version of Slug, S-L-U-G. It was compiled and created from existing STEM recordings. John, what's a STEM recording?
Okay, basically what this is the Ramones recorded a demo of SLUG, which is on the Road to Ruin deluxe edition, or actually it might be on the Rocket to Russia. I think it's on the Rocket to Russia reissue. But they never recorded a full band studio recording. However, each member recorded separate tracks, but they never actually put them together or recorded them together. So what Linda Ramone and Johnny Lay and the producers of this reissue they took different scraps of the song and blended them together to make an actual studio recording of the track, but the band themselves never actually recorded this track, and I don't know, but I think there might have been a little bit behind-the-scenes work, too, to make it fit together. You know what I mean? Like maybe some other people played some stuff that they're not talking about to make it fit. You know what I'm saying? But even so the band never recorded this track. They took different scraps and put it together to make a finished song.
It sounds decent. I mean, it was cool. I mean, bigger, more broad question here is, are they just going to do deluxe reissues of every Ramones album? Is that like the plan? Because they've been doing this for a while. I keep seeing the Rocket to Russia and the self-titled and Leap Home deluxe like reissues at every record store.
My impression is that like these things always start with good intentions and then they peter out after end of the century, right? So where do they wrap up the last ones? Because they didn't go all the way, right? Like Animal Boy,
they went through all the Sire. They went through all the ones that were Sire, and before they changed to a Radioactive.
Yeah.
So I don't know. They start strong, and then the reissuers sort of lose interest when the.
Oh no! Actually, I'm wrong. You're right. They did peter out, Adam. You're absolutely right. They went through Animal Boy, and then Captain Oi did some pretty nice reissues of Halfway to Sanity, Brain Drain, Mondo Bizarro, and Acid Eaters in the UK. But they weren't as nice as the super nice ones done in the US of the first album through Animal Boy. Adam, you're entirely correct. I'm wrong.
Yeah. So, you know, if history is anything to judge by, I guess that's what you go by. I haven't heard this because it's not available to listen to in Canada. Thanks, Stizza. Oh, if we only had a NAFTA negotiated, John, I could listen to SLUG, but I can't. So anyways, we're going to stick on the classic file here. So
I want to comment on this, Adam.
Okay, go ahead.
First thing is, for the first year that I heard SL, I used to listen on my CD Walkman. I used to be an RA, and as an RA, you have to like put up like bulletin boards. And so I used to listen to the Ramones on my CD Walkman. And so it's not like an iPod where it says the name of the song. For about a year or two, I thought it wasn't SLUG. I thought the song was Ethel Eugene. And Joey was singing to a girl named Ethel Eugene for some reason. So anyways, I don't know if I'm a fan of this. I think it sounds fine. But I'm not a fan of recontextualizing deceased artists' work without their consent. You know what I mean? I don't think this is too much of a sin, but, you know, how far can you push it? Especially with modern technology, you can push it pretty far. I mean, they can make a hologram of Biggie or Tupac or whatever, unconvincing holograms. So, I mean, what if they started using, like, Joey's voice and made, like, new Ramones songs, you know, using technology? I'm not necessarily a fan of taking the control of a work out of an artist's hands. Now, even a remaster is taking the control out of an artist's hands. But I think all the remasters and the reissues to date have been extremely tasteful and well done. I think this is skirting the line of tastefulness, especially since we have a demo version. The demo version is pretty good. I don't think we need to manufacture things that didn't exist just to get people interested. I think this is walking the line.
So this next one though, then this must seem pretty straight and kosher to you then. So, Earache Records, they announced that they are going to be doing a vinyl reissue of the Misfits classic Walk Among Us in November. You really want to do that in October, right? Like that would be fitting.
Right. But... Yeah.
but hey, anyways, so, it looks like, because nothing else has been announced right now, this is going to be a straight repress. So no bonus material, no revisioning or anything like that. This is going to be, if you want a new copy of Walk Among Us on vinyl, Earache's got you covered, essentially. So the record is going to be identified in their catalog as the catalog number MOSH666, which is super fun. So that's coming out. So previously, if you wanted a U.S. vinyl copy of Walk Among Us, it would have been released either on Ruby Records, which was a sub-label of Slash, or it was done under Rhino as licensed by Ruby. And Rhino is the Warner Music-owned reissue machine. So that's what's going on. I always like hearing one of these, you know, when a band that was from that era pre-independent label sort of ends up working with sort of one of the independent labels that kind of came in their wake. But usually it's not to reissue one of their big things. So it's kind of cool that this is the new home.
The real question, Adam, is can we read between the lines here? So I did the math, 38 years for a release. So that you wouldn't license something for like 38 years. That's weird, right? Maybe it's copyright termination. But here's the point is have the Misfits regain control of this record? Because famously, this record was the only one that Misfits didn't have total control over, which is also why it's not in the box set. The other issue is why after 38 years of it being distributed by Slash and Ruby is it now on Earache, an independent label? And what's especially interesting is I appreciate Earache giving them the hallowed 666 moniker, because Earache themselves has a lot of, you know, very famous heavy metal bands on their roster, so to give that to the Misfits is quite an honor. But I do wonder if, you know, in the wake of the Misfits reunion and all that stuff, is there more to be gleaned here? Will we get more Misfits reissues in the future? Will there be bonus material? Is there any more archived Misfits material out there? Will 12 Hits from Hell be reissued? Is this a harbinger? Or is it just that Slash and Ruby and Warner, they're like, we don't have time for this. We're just going to let Earache pay us so they can sell it. Or it could be that as well.
No one has an answer to those questions. Ricky, do you have an answer to those questions?
I pulled my copy out. I have the red translucent one from Ruby. Do we know any other details about like what's going to be in this reissue? I mean, I seem to see it fairly often in record stores. It's not like it's hard to find.
Here you go. Let's see when the termination deadline would be. Okay. Grant their license after January 1st, 1978. Executed by one author. Oh, it could be a copyright termination. I wonder if it is. Okay, so here, do you guys know what copyright termination is?
Like they just let go of the rights to it?
Actually, it's the opposite. Basically, in the United States, if you have licensed your rights to a work to a company or other person, after 35 years, you can pull it back automatically and regain control of it if you go through a very specific and very time-sensitive procedure. That is basically, within 35 years, you have to let them know you're going to terminate, but you can't let them know you're going to terminate, I think it's before 5 years before the termination. So 35 plus 1980 would be 2015, and maybe Danzig was a little bit late on serving the termination, and a lot of artists don't even know about termination. So this is within the termination window. It would actually mean they're only a year late, I think. I think termination, you don't have to give a 1 year. Yeah, you can give up to a 2 year notice. Yeah, you can give between a 10 year and 2 year notice. So this could suggest that Danzig is only 1 year late on his termination. So maybe he is terminating the rights to this to Slash, Warner, Ruby, and taking control of it back. And maybe there's going to be more archived material, although Danzig has shown a severe reticence to any archival material when it comes to the Misfits, unfortunately. Or Samhain. Or Danzig.
John, I want to stick with this quasi-theme for this segment of the show where we're talking about seasoned bands doing seasoned things or seasoned releases. And this one, if you squint, it kind of fits into that pattern, I guess.
This fits.
But we got some Melvins.
This fits with the Misfits.
We got some Melvins news. It does. Well, I guess, yeah, it fits with the general, satanic doom and gloom that we're doing here.
And so, Buzz Osborne and Glenn Danzig don't like each other.
Oh, there you go. So your buddies, the Melvins.
Yes.
So they're releasing a two-song 10-inch with Alcisneros. I don't know where to put the emphasis on that. Alcisneros, which is titled Sabbath. And they've released the A side of the release, which is going to be a cover of Black Sabbath's Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. The 10-inch is going to be coming out on Amphetamine Reptile sometime in the fall, and you can go onto YouTube or go onto Punk News, and you can listen to the Melvins cover of Sabbath Bloody Sabbath right now. John, this is one of these things that is intrinsically up your alley. What are your thoughts?
Adam, this is exceptionally tasty. I really enjoyed this cover. I think it's fantastic. Honestly, it's not easy to convincingly cover Sabbath. You know, it's hard to really convincingly cover like Sabbath or Judas Priest or any of the legendary bands or Led Zeppelin. It's very hard to do good covers. These boys nailed it. And I will say, how fitting that, I mean, over the past 20 or 25 years, Melvins have shied away from Sabbath and Kiss comparisons. The reason being is when they first started, they said, oh, we like Sabbath and we like Kiss. And Melvins were not the first, but one of the first slow punk bands. And so ever since then, people are like, oh, you guys like Sabbath? Oh, you guys like Kiss? You know, tell us about why you like Kiss. Tell us about why you like Sabbath. And so after a while, I think the Melvins have gotten tired of talking about Kiss and Sabbath, and I think they've gotten tired of people assuming that the only thing that makes them up is being fans of Kiss and Sabbath when there's really a lot more to the Melvins. So they've kind of shied away from Sabbath, but here they are again, embracing Black Sabbath, quite fittingly with Alcisneros of Sleep, and of course Sleep is the ultimate Sabbath worship band, and also Sleep is fantastic because not only are they Sabbath worshippers, they kind of have evolved beyond that or pushed that with the Dope Smoker and even the new album, which is called, the new Sleep album called? The first track is Marijuana Genot's Theme, I know that. The Sciences, that's what it's called. Fantastic album. Two comments on this is, A, this is great, I loved it. It's not radically different. If anything, it shows that both sides of the equation are fantastic at replicating and feeling the soul of their influences. Is it too similar is the first question. Second, over the past 5 years or so, Melvins have done a lot of covers. About 4 years ago, they did an entire covers album. They've also done like two or three covers each on their latest few albums. I'm digging this, but are the Melvins doing too many covers? And also, when you do a cover, should you do it kind of traditional or should you do it far and whacked out? And also, this is a super group here, the Melvins and Sleep, basically. Would you rather hear them doing a cool cover or would you rather hear them doing an original working together? You know, lot to think about there.
I think an original doing together is a bit more of a risky take because you're getting input from two different bands for one song. But if you're doing a cover, you already have a basis for something.
Can an original be more meaningful than a cover?
It can be, absolutely. But the problem is you have I just think it's a riskier take that way. But it's still, I mean, good on them for daring to do, for doing something daring, especially doing a 10-inch single, which I appreciate. I think that's really cool.
10-inch singles are great. We've talked about that. There should be more.
Yes, and 12-inch singles. More.
Mr. Ricky, play a song.
Okay, so I got something basically brand spanking new here. By the time this podcast is up, we will have premiered a song from Natterers, friend of the show, new full-length. They're finally putting out the first full-length through Boss Tunage Records out in the UK. It'll be out October 5th. 2018, and I've heard it. It's fantastic. It's really great. If you're looking for some new hardcore this year, this is an album definitely worth checking out. We will be premiering the very first track off the album. Oh, the album's called Head in Threatening Attitude. By the way, the first track is called Power Tripping. Again. I really highly recommend this band. I mean, they're on episode 250 or 300. One of those they called in once, and that was really cool of them to do because it was late. It was quite late their time. But they got a new album coming out, and I am stoked on it. It's gonna be really cool. So here is the song "Power Tripping" from Natterer's new upcoming album, "Head in Threatening Attitude." Here it is.
All right, we are back. That was Natterers. So let's blow through a couple things that are going on here, and just to let people know here, this is audio that you should go and check out with your audio player of choice. I mean, the first thing that I want to mention here, and I don't even know if we posted a story about this yet, but I kind of fucked that up, is there's a new Single Mothers record. It just exists now. They released it like all of a sudden with no fanfare on like a Tuesday or whatever, but it's out. You can grab it from wherever you get your music from. It's called Through a Wall. It's 14 songs. It is probably the heaviest thing the band's ever recorded, which is super interesting because their last record was a little bit more middle of the road as far as tempo and aggression and all that. And it's also kind of surprising because Drew Thompson, the frontman, has been he's been playing in a solo project called the Drew Thompson Foundation for the past few months that has been just sort of like an enjoyable little light pop rock affair. So you really got the sense that, you know, his interests had drifted away from being a scuzzy loud punk rock band. But that is clearly not the case, because Through a Wall is really loud and angry and cool. I think the band at this point is entirely Drew. He recorded with Ian Romano from Attack in Black, and he's been drumming in Career Suicide recently. So Ian drummed on this record and played some guitar on it, and they had like 14 different people kind of pop into the studio and play various instruments, but it's pretty much Drew's show right now, if not because everyone else is doing something else. So this band, like at one point it was Drew, it was Justice Krar, who Justice he's not really playing with anyone right now, but he is one half of the jokey I don't even know what you call it band Sideman that was on one of the Punk News mixtapes. Ross Miller, who is the new bass player for the Dirty Nil at one point, was in Single Mothers and is, of course, not anymore because he's in the Nil. So I don't know who's in the band right now except for Drew. But in any case, it's really good. You should go check it out if you have not yet been able to check it out. Interestingly, too, Drew made a big deal about going sober. So he was a super angry, risky lifestyle alcoholic during a lot of the past Single Mothers era, and this is the first thing that he's recorded completely sober, and you know, did not at all take away from the craziness of the record. So anyways, someone who's listening should go check that out, because it's cool. Let's talk about Nightbirds. Ricky, read a story.
Please. Okay. Nightbirds have released a new track off their new album, which is called Roll Credits. The track is called Onward to Obscurity, which features vocals from Jerry A of Poison Idea. The record is due out on September 21st, 2018 via Fat Records, and you can check the song out. I believe it was Brooklyn Vegan that premiered it. Holy shit, they are definitely two for two in my book. And also Jerry A's vocals were fantastic too. This was a little bit more harder and even angrier than the usual Nightbird stuff. Definitely more in the hardcore realm, so I think Jerry A's vocals were very appropriate, and I'm hoping, like they had CJ Ramone on the last record, Mutiny on Muscle Beach, and now they got Jerry A. I think this is kind of a cool little pattern that they can do if they keep going. Like, in the future, they just get someone from, you know, very seasoned punk musician to do guest vocals. I think that'd be a really cool thing that they just continue to do. Sub question also, is their first guitarist is on this record, right? Or is he just playing in the shows?
You know, Google, I believe it's got the two guitars. So it's got the newer guy, what's his name? PJ?
And
it's
PJ, got, yeah.
And it's got the older guy, Mike Hunchback. I think they're both on the record. So I think technically Nightbirds is now a five-piece.
Okay, because that wasn't too clear. But still, this song was fantastic. Adam, were you able to listen to this in Canada?
Yes, yeah, the Stizzle allowed me. So no, this is super fun, super good. I mean, like, Poison Idea is super cool, hearing them in the mix with Nightbirds, which is a band that, like, I think all three of us agree is great, is yep. Is great. So yeah, I'm down with this. Can't wait to hear this whole record.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's great. It's Nightbirds doing the Nightbirds thing. It's not radically new, but I do appreciate Nightbirds bringing in guest vocalists. I think now is the perfect time for Nightbirds to bring in guest vocalists and do risky stuff. And this is cool, and I'm down.
All right. Well, that's what's going on in the Nightbirds world. Speaking of people that have at some point been on this podcast way in the past, but oh, yeah. There is a new record that has been announced from Antartigo Vespucci. Is that right? Do I have the name right? It's one of these names I read a million times, but I never spell or I never speak aloud. It is called Love in the Time of Email, which I think is a really cool title. It's going to be coming out on Polyvinyl on October 26th. Now, this band is the band that is made up of Chris Farron of Fake Problems fame and Jeff Rosenstock, of course, of Bomb the Music Industry fame, and of, you know, both of very fruitful solo career fames. So yeah, so this is these two guys teaming up and making music together. So Love in the Time of Email is what, 13 tracks? So you can find the cover art over on Punk News right now. You can stream a song called White Noise, and there you go. So this exists. It's a thing. I don't really have too much to comment on this. I don't have a read on this band per se. I neglected to put a lot of time into the previous release from them, so I don't really know. You know, I need to go back and do my homework before I can talk too much about it. But you know, it's a likable pop rock song.
Yeah, I mean, between, you know, I gotta tell you, like, as much as, like, I kind of am neutral on or, you know, very moderate fan of both of these guys' solo projects, I really like this band a lot. I thought this song was really great. It's really just sort of a more fun, laid-back kind of pop rock thing. I find it really interesting that Polyvinyl is sort of scooping up all these bands now with Jeff Rosenstock and Antartigo Vespucci. It makes me wonder what other bands in our realm that they'll be signing as well. But I pre-ordered this. I'm very excited. I'm a pretty big Antartigo Vespucci fan. I'm giving thumbs up for this.
I mean, my only thing that I'm not sure about with these guys is because the stuff that I've heard from them has just been nice, right? Like, it's just been sort of nice pop music, but it hasn't particularly, at least from the stuff I've listened to, seemed to leverage any of the particular personality quirks that either Jeff or Chris exude in all their other stuff. If I didn't know that these guys were in this band, would I give it the time of day at all?
Well, the thing is, like, it's at least in the beginning, it was very much Chris Farron focused vocally, and one or two songs on each release, you'd hear Jeff sing a little bit, but what you hear in the instrumentation is a lot more Jeff, and especially on this song where you hear like the super fast picking guitar solo and the that he does like in all of his stuff. With harmonies and stuff like that. There's big, you know, the big bombastic stuff definitely doesn't come from Farron, like those big choruses. That's definitely a Jeff Rosenstock thing. So I think Rosenstock sort of takes lead on the instrumental side, while Chris Farron is holding down vocals for the most part. I that's at least the read I get from it.
John, you wading into this one at all?
You know, it's cool. One thing we're kind of seeing like a resurgence of like the 70s again, where like bands would like just like a not really worry too much about their career, if you will, and just record tons of stuff and put out 1, 2, 3 albums a year. You know, in the 90s and 2000s, you did see that because there was a record promotion tour cycle. So a band would only put out an album every 3 or 4 years. Now that there's no money in recordings, a lot of bands are just putting out stuff because they want to put stuff out. And I think that's cool, and I'm glad that a lot of bands are being loose and maybe not worrying too much about how their legacy will be impacted by recordings. And honestly, like, that's kind of how you get the very best stuff. I would like to see Anarchico Vespucci do kind of weird and crazy and wild stuff. I like the power pop aspect. As Adam says, I would really like them to both use their own respective personalities and really make something to really blow my mind. Will this record do it? Maybe.
All right, speaking of minds blown, John, there's a new fucked up song out there.
It's called House of... My mind is blown, Adam. Blown.
It is called House of Keys. It's coming off their new album, Dose Your Dreams, which is out on October 5th on Emerge in the States, Arts and Crafts in Canada. So you can check that out online at the moment. It's the third song that the band has released from the record after Raise Your Voice, Joyce, and Normal People. I've listened to this once and not enough to mentally process it too much yet. So I'm gonna hold my keep my powder dry on this one. But John, you got any thoughts?
Effed Up is in a new golden age. I keep saying this, and I don't mean to beat down on anybody. Glass Boys was a very reserved, calm-ish record by design, mind you. I think it's like, this is our record of reflection. Now they're like, you know what? We're past that phase, and now we're on to our next phase. What we are doing, like this is what I want from basically all my favorite bands: weird, crazy, wild, daring stuff that retains their core, which I realize is both cliche and oxymoronic, if you will. But that's what I want. And that's what this record is. That's what this track is. Effed Up is swinging for it. They're not scared to get weird. They're keeping Damien in the mix. They're doing – it's basically like space rock is what it is. It's space rock with like a bunch of whacked out instruments. The songs are long. There's weird things going on in the background. The whole – it's basically Effed Up doing Hawkwind. I'm just going to say it. I mean, check it out. It's like 18 tracks. It's about flying through time and going back in time to, you know, go to anarchist punk rock and, you know, taking acid and flying all around dimensions and time. The songs are 7 minutes long. They get crazier and crazier. There's whacked out space effects. It's Effed Up doing Hawkwind. I just had this epiphany, Adam. No wonder I love this record. It's Effed Up doing Hawkwind, and it is great, and this is cool, and more punk bands should be daring like Effed Up, and more punk bands should be as plotted and as calculated as Effed Up. Well, it's a combination of being completely whimsical and completely plotted. That is, I don't think Effed Up like says this is exactly what we're going to do, but once they get the core idea, they build stuff around it, like these side releases we're seeing with this record, with the concept of this record, with the rollout of this record. This is a punk band doing everything right in the year 2018, at least when it comes to Johnny G's fandom, and I am down with this, and I am excited, and Effed Up is killing it, and it's so great. You know, a lot of your favorite punk bands, they put out your favorite stuff before you become a fan, or you become a fan, you know, and then everything else after that is good, not great, or even bad. Effed Up is cool because they have peaks and valleys, much, much more peaks and valleys, but they are back on top and putting out some of their most interesting, exciting stuff now after, what, 15 years, 16 years? This is up there with Year the Dragon. This is up there with Year the Pig. This is up there with Chemistry of Common Life. This is exciting, Adam.
Yeah, I agree. I for the most part, I mean, I want to hear the track in the context of the whole album. I thought, to quote you, John, I think this was pretty a pretty daring thing to do, especially with like the electro thing going on in there. But I still want to hear the whole thing first. But overall, it was a very interesting track. It gave me more hope for the record.
All right, so Ricky. Yeah. Have you listened at all to the band Jellicoe and Woodbury?
I have not.
Okay, so...
What if he was like, yeah, I've been a fan since, like, forever. Yeah,
you're going to blow our whole theory up. So this is one of these things that, like, you know, I don't know how this information is supposed to get out, except that, honestly, like, I saw a guy tweet about it in sort of a... in a kind of oblique way. But okay, so there's this band called Jellicoe and Woodbury. They're from Toronto. they are releasing a 7-inch on the UK hardcore label Quality Control HQ on September 17th. It's a loud ass pummeling, you know, horse two track kind of like hardcore record, just big, beefy, angry, old school hardcore. Like, how would you describe this shit, John? That's kind of what it is.
I would call it neo retro hardcore. That's what I would call it.
All right. So it's coming out. It's got some pretty crazy cover art by a Japanese artist named Tsuji, who's done like tons of hardcore punk stuff. He's pretty famous in those circles. Now, I don't know everything about what's going on in Toronto hardcore, which is to say I don't know much at all, but, you know, maybe more than you two. But I never heard of these guys. I've never seen this band on a tour poster or anything like that. And it appears that it's some under-the-hood, fucked-up side project.
Indeed, Adam. Would you mention one person that's named in the credits of the record?
I'll mention two people that are named in the credits. First, the more boring one, and then the fun one. So the more boring one here is that the Jellicoe and Woodbury EP was recorded and mixed by Alex Gamble. Now, Alex also recorded a lot of the material for Dose Your Dreams. He did the Raise Your Voice Joyce single and all that. So Alex Gamble, who recorded Fucked Up, you know, at the same studio and everything, recorded this Jellicoe and Woodbury record. This band, who again no one seems to have heard of, is pulling some pretty big favors from the hardcore world, like getting Tsuji to come in there and do art for their release. If you're just some band out of nowhere doing a 7-inch, you don't get that guy. But the most interesting part here is that if you look at the credits on Bandcamp for this, there's a credit for orchestration, which is credited to someone named Davi Deli, D'Eli, Davi D'Eli Aid, which if you sound it out, is David Eliad. David Eliad is David, is like David comes to life, David. It is the name of the frequent protagonist of all the various weird narratives on Fucked Up's music. And David Eliad is also credited in various managerial roles and things like that on the band's records. If you go from one Fucked Up record to the next, you'll see David Eliad is credited with all kinds of crazy shit. He has been before it kind of got out that David was the titular David of Fucked Up's cosmology, let's call it.
Nice use of that word, Adam.
He was always something that was treated as like a Svengali, like the Svengali of Fucked Up, like the fifth Beatle kind of thing, and no one was quite sure he existed, and well, he doesn't. That's really the biggest piece of evidence that Jellicoe and Woodbury is not some band that just happens to have a really crazy hardcore release coming out, but is actually either Fucked Up or members thereof. And I don't think anyone's come out and confirmed this too much, except that, you know, people on Twitter seem to be talking about it. So, you know, people on Twitter are never wrong. But what I'm curious about, John, here is there going to be a bunch of these?
There already is one, Adam. You're aware of this, right? There is another one. Raise Your Voice, Joyce the compilation is in conjunction with this and has members of Effed Up on it. However, Adam, there's also another Effed Up link to this release. Madman. Do you know who Madman is?
Yeah, so it is credited to a madman, and I don't know who in particular that's referring to.
That's Jonah Falco. He had a very short-lived project called Madman. Or Mad Men. Maybe it was Mad Men, but it's got to be him.
Yeah, so I love this. What I love, John, about this is that not only is the band like outdoing this weird stuff, but they themselves are not really talking about it.
And not only that, I believe they're unaware of it, because on Twitter, Damien's like, well, this one was a surprise to me. So I like how even members of the band don't know what's going on. Unless it's all a big hoax, Adam. Unless it's all a big calculated thing. I will say, Adam, is I don't know if there's a deeper meaning to all these little surprises. And there doesn't need to be, because it's just so much fun. Like, it's just fun, isn't it?
Oh yeah, and like I want to know, like is there some way that we're gonna be able to, like, are there clues? Are we gonna be able to figure out, like, what else?
Adam,
is coming?
What if it, like, all fits together somehow? Like, what if there's, like, some kind of, like, theoretical map or something that, like, links them all together to form a bigger puzzle? How about that?
Oh, look, okay, since I last talked about this here, Fucked Up has tweeted out the link to this with the single word bark. So there you go. But yeah, it's just the amount. John, you frequently come back to the word whimsy. There's a lot of whimsy going on in the punk rock universe, or in the Fucked Up universe right now, and it's great.
I agree. I would not say that word past Halichuk, though. He does not seem like a man who revels in whimsy necessarily.
No, we'll leave him to his own devices. He can.
Damien is up down for the whimsy. I believe this is perhaps more of a calculated strike than whimsy, or maybe it is whimsy as Halichuk understands whimsy. You know, one of my favorite quotes ever. I said to him, I interviewed him once. I said, "Mike, are you having fun with Effed Up?" And he's like, "Well, in a matter of speaking." And I'm like, "What does that mean?" And like, he kind of wouldn't answer. I'm like, "Do you mean you're having accomplishments and that pleases you?" And he basically said, "Yes, that's more accurate," you know, which I found very interesting and telling of the man.
Yeah, I've always – he's one of those people that I would probably, like, somehow find a way to not interview, because I'd be worried that I would make him mad.
I'm pretty sure I made him mad a couple of times. But listen, I mean, you know, an interview, they don't have to be your best friend, Adam. Sometimes it's more about the info and the introspection and extrospection than it is about being palsy-wowsy. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but you also don't want to look like a
dick.
Like you've completely blew it. That also goes into my, like – I would never want to interview John Lydon, because I'm pretty sure I'd piss him off. And,
oh,
like,
I would. I'd have to take the risk. I'd have to take the risk, you know. Man.
That'd be cool to piss off Johnny Rotten. Are you kidding me?
I wouldn't want to make him mad. I'd want to make him happy, you know. And even though I just said you don't want to be palsy-wowsy, I would get no pleasure from making him mad, but I would get pleasure from making him happy, you know, or interested.
Yeah, it's not so much to be a fanboy about it. It's just that, you know, I'd hate to, like, sit down, have the opportunity to do the interview, but to have misread the subject to such a degree that they're just going to be like, well, fuck this, and just either blow it off or throw it, or people that are known to be difficult and temperamental. If they are known to be that, then you want to at least sort of approach the interview prepared so as to not, you know, repeat the same mistakes that everyone else has made trying to interview them. But if you don't do that, it just means you haven't done your research, and then you know.
The truth with those guys is you can't be too too much of a supplicant either, though. Like, if you're too, oh, you're great, then that pisses them off too. It's a very fine line to walk, you know.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those things I've thought about a lot. It's like what do you do if you're talking to someone like that? Because if you look at, say, like Lydon, for example, he seems to get frosty with people when they are being too much of a supplicant, right? Like, you look at him and, like, you know, what does he want to talk about a lot of the time? Like, he wants to talk about the things he's interested in. He wants to talk about Pill and things like that, what's going on in that world. He doesn't want to talk about Sex Pistols, right? But a lot of people will get him in the room and just be like, oh, fuck, you know, let's talk about something you did when you were 20 years old, you 70-year-old guy. Is he 70?
He's probably like 62, something like that. I mean, think about it. And imagine, like if you just, like, did, like, I don't know, like a really awesome computer project, and some guy's like, oh, let's talk about this application you did in high school. You know what I mean? You'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, he is 62.
It's not quite the same. It's a little different, honestly. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
That is a really interesting problem that, I mean, we're going pretty long, so I won't draw it out here too much. But, like, that's an interesting problem that you have to deal with in music that you don't deal with in many other
true
realms of life. Is that, like if you were a band and you had a hit and you fucking, you know, 19 when you wrote that thing. This is going to follow you forever. And it doesn't matter, you know, where you are in your life or what's happened to you or what kind of journey you've been on. You know, people are going to, you know, people are going to show up at your show and be like, play Baby, I'm an Anarchist. And you're going to be like, I've been through so much shit in my life since that. But that's what people are going to want to hear.
I tell you, man, kudos to Keith Morris, who rose above that. Not once, but twice, Adam.
Ah, rose above. No, nothing? Okay. Nothing? Fine.
I want to end the show on that. Okay, here's a song to get us out of here.
Get out of here.
So, whenever I interview bands, I like to ask them kind of like, what are the bands in their scene should people get into? So here's one that was recommended to me by the guys in Talk Show Host, and there's some super fun stuff on this record. So this is a band from Toronto called 16 Scandals. They are a sort of a goofy party punk band. Their art and their song titles and everything is all very silly, but this one track I'm super into. I think it's really cool. I think it's a really good rock song. So it is called Differens, Differends. It comes off of an EP they released in 2017 called Dorkmanteau, and it is super fun. So here you go. So this is a band called 16 Scandals out of Toronto with Dorkmanteau. We'll just leave it with this. If anyone wants to send us email, podcast@punktunes.org is how you do that. Any parting words?
Listen to Crime. Listen to Crime, listen to F'd Up, listen to Nightbirds. I'm sorry, Ricky, go ahead.
I was going to say listen to Nightbirds.
Oh, yeah, okay, listen to bands. There you go. All right, here you go. Bye.